From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
81% of members voted yes to give the bargaining committee the authority to call a strike, if no other path forward can be found. And I think for the first time, people could really feel, I demand respect. I deserve respect. That's the message that I think this vote sends most clearly.
I really believe the right answer is not to have a strike. The right answer is to implement together on a cooperative basis the contract, our last, best, and final offer. We met 67 times for more than a year, and we are clearly at impasse.
Well, in the fight over a new state worker contract with the AFSCME union, I guess it's on, between Governor Rauner and the largest public employee union, members of AFSCME, and you heard Roberta Lynch, the director of AFSCME Council 31, talking there. They voted recently to give overwhelming approval to strike. And of course, Governor Rauner giving his thoughts on that. What happens next? We'll talk about that and more today. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. In studio with me is Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse Bureau, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter. And Monique Garcia with the Chicago Tribune joins us again. Monique, good to have you back with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And Brian, Monique, tell us what took place this week. We know that AFSCME members have been voting for several weeks now, overwhelmingly favoring a strike, but that doesn't necessarily mean one is going to happen.
No, that's true. So the process has been about 3 weeks. AFSCME says it had about 200 polling stations statewide at all hours of the day because you have different people work different shifts in different facilities. And not to throw too many numbers out there, but this is actually just a share of the AFSCME workforce. So there's about 40,000 state employees who are in AFSCME, but 10,000 of those are security officials or security guards, correctional officers, sergeants, people like that in the prisons and in the Department of Juvenile Justice. They're not eligible to strike. They weren't eligible to vote. So of the remaining AFSCME workers, about 81% of those who voted said they would favor the option to go out on strike. Now that goes up to AFSCME's bargaining committee. They're supposed to meet sometime in the next week or two. And at any point, they could decide, okay, the time has come. Now we will go out on strike and notify the Rauner administration of that. But it is not a guaranteed outcome at this point.
And Monique,
that's correct.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that the executive director of AFSCME, Roberta Lynch, said that we are trying to avoid going on strike by any means necessary. She said, yes, our bargaining committee will get together. They will review these results from the strike. But then we need to plan out what we do next. Ultimately, they want the governor to come back to the negotiating table. They're hoping that by showing the strength of force, that it will convince the governor to come back, start talking the talk again, and start really working out the nitty-gritty so that there isn't a work stoppage, so that there isn't a big disruption in services. The governor indicated he's not on board with that. He says he still wants to move forward with his final best offer. But alternatively, there is this thing playing out in the courts. AFSCME is suing to prevent the contract from being imposed on them. Right now, that's been delayed in court. There's a temporary stay on that effort. And that's a process that could take months and it could take years to play out ultimately.
So I guess, should I just view this as a negotiating ploy, or are they serious about this? Do we really think that, a strike is a real possibility down the road if the governor does not come back to the table?
I mean, impossible to know the answer to, like so many things, I guess, in state government. But it's probably both a negotiating ploy and a real threat. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. You know, some of the considerations here are, though, that this is a governor who campaigned on the notion that, he looked favorably on what Ronald Reagan did during the PATCO strike. Of course, that was, I believe, if memory serves, an illegal strike. And President Reagan fired the air traffic controllers and replaced them, essentially breaking the PATCO union. We know that Governor Rauner has a very strong feeling that public sector unions are bad for Illinois. He's campaigned against the government union bosses was one of his frequent refrains. We know that before he was a candidate, he used to refer to AFSCME as AFSCAMI. So this is a man who is clearly really does not like the influence of public sector unions. He's called it a corrupt bargain. And so I think the union members, you know, would be taking taking their chances with somebody who would go all out who has, at least in his past statements and actions, gone all out to do what he can to weaken the union.
That's an important point. This is a smaller battle and the larger war, frankly. The governor has said over and over again that he would be willing to have workers walk out. He'd be willing to shut down government to get these kind of changes he wants. And it's a similar approach that he's taken to the budget negotiations with lawmakers, quite frankly. He says that, you know, this temporary pain, this temporary disruption is worth it to shake up and change the status quo. Of course, unions and Democratic lawmakers have a very different opinion of this effort, though the governor notes that Democrats have long been aligned with the unions. The unions provide a lot of money to Democratic legislative funds when it comes to be campaign time, and they also provide boots on the ground to get votes out. So the governor looks at this as kind of a sea change effort in Illinois. You weaken the unions, you weaken Democrats, and Republicans have a larger seat at the table.
Charlie, let's get your thoughts on this.
Well, first off, I should note, as I've done on past occasions, that I have a biased opinion on this. I'm a lifelong member of the Chicago Newspaper Guild. My father helped organize the guild at the old Chicago Times back in the 1930s, so I definitely believe in the value of organized labor, be it in the private sector or in the public sector. And much is made of the corrupt bargain where the unions support Democrats and Democrats support unions. But I think it's kind of in the DNA of most Democrats to align themselves with the working stiffs as opposed to the bankers and the financiers and the folks with whom Bruce Rauner is used to running around. And so the small pain that Rauner talks about to get what he wants, for him maybe it's, you know, the equivalent of having cut his cheek while shaving or something. But for human service providers and the less disadvantaged in our society, the people who rely on those services, it's a whole lot of pain. And that's what's so troubling about this. The governor seems to have this disconnect from what average people go through. He talks about modest increases in health care costs for the state workers under his plan. The union says some people would have to pay $10,000 a year more to keep the coverage that they have. Now, 10 grand might be modest, might be pocket change for somebody in Rauner's income level, but for most people, 10 grand is a lot of money.
Well, you mentioned, Charlie, the average Illinoisan, and we've seen surveys that show, despite some social services groups and other other entities not receiving state funding because of the budget impasse, that still the average person doesn't feel as though they're being impacted much. So would they notice, you know, would it be a major pain for them if state workers walked off the jobs, especially if those public safety workers have to stay on the job?
Well, I think it would be, in the sense that the governor and his administration, his aides, say, well, we've got it all covered. We'll be able to fill those spots. But where are you going to get people who have the skill level and the knowledge and the institutional memory for a lot of these jobs? It's not that it's, you know, people out shoveling walks or mowing the grass. There's a lot more involved than that.
Well, just real quick, Brian, Monique, before Charlie goes on there has been some reporting out there that the governor, behind the scenes at least, may have even been talking about a National Guard being brought in to fulfill some of these jobs if need be.
That has been reported. The governor himself, of course, won't go into detail about the backup plans. Asked yesterday how he would prepare for 30,000 workers to potentially walk off the job, he said, well, we've had a lot of time to think about it. These discussions have been going on for quite a while, so we know we have a plan in place to keep core services operating. What core services means is open to interpretation. And honestly, it's going to be interesting to see if they do go to a strike, what that actually looks like. Would that be a mass walk walk-off, or would it be kind of on a rolling basis? Perhaps some agencies don't show up one day and other agencies don't show up the next day. But it is a question of what this would actually look like day to day. And the governor has tried to stress that it would be painful for workers. He says, if you have concerns about paying more in healthcare, imagine what it would be like to be in the midst of a strike, not receiving a paycheck, not receiving coverage for healthcare, not having your paychecks go into your pensions. So he's trying all he can to kind of signal that it would be more detrimental to workers to go on strike than it would be to live under his new contract terms.
And Charlie, let me go back to you, let you finish your thought there.
No, what I was going to say is that it strikes me that it would make more sense from a public service point of view to try and resolve these things through compromise. The union has suggested, okay, we'll take a wage freeze, we'll pay more for our health insurance, but not as much as you want. There are issues that if the governor were really acting in good faith, and I don't believe he is based on the comments, based on his historical record of being anti-union, I think this could be resolved. And you look back historically, the first contract, if I'm not mistaken, with the union was signed by a Republican, Jim Thompson. And throughout Thompson's tenure, Jim Edgar's tenure, George Ryan's tenure, all Republicans, unions negotiated, contracts were settled, and we've never reached this sort of a almost a doomsday scenario where 20,000 state workers may walk off the job, virtually bringing to a halt a lot of key state functions.
Brian, we have seen the governors in the past, though, at times have some disagreements with the unions, especially AFSCME. We saw it with Pat Quinn, for example, over pension legislation, things like that. This is different, though. For those people that don't follow this as closely, you know, what is different? What's the difference between the previous disagreements and what we're seeing now?
Well, and it's not just governors who've had disagreements with AFSCME. I mean, House Speaker Madigan has had different disagreements with AFSCME over the years. And in fact, you know, tried to insert himself more, at least a few years ago, in the bargaining process. And they tried and failed to do that in the last couple of years here, where there was a number of moves to prevent an impasse and instead let any sort of dispute like that go to arbitration. They tried and failed to pass that bill at AFSCME's behest. What's different is you have a dedicated ideologue with a virtually unlimited bank account in the form of the governor, who has not only done the things that he can do through his power to negotiate the contract with AFSCME, but has really reshaped the Republican Party in his image. I mean, you mentioned the Republican governors, or I think Charlie mentioned the Republican governors who could had worked with AFSCME in the past and signed those contracts. The governor came into office and quickly replaced a lot of legislators by giving them state jobs in some cases who had been more aligned with the unions, legislators from the Springfield area who had a lot of state workers and AFSCME members in their constituency. Those people are no longer in the legislature, and the governor had a big hand in helping change the Republican Party on that level as well.
And I think that speaks to the idea that Charlie brought up about compromise, about negotiation. This governor has indicated that he is willing to go to the mat on a number of issues over and over and over again in order to rack up what he considers a win. This is what he's doing on the budget in terms of his agenda items that he's pushing as part of a larger budget deal. And this is what he's doing now with unions. He is really going and saying, look, I want changes. I'm willing to stand here and we'll play the blame game all day long. And I hope that when push comes to shove and people want to hold me accountable, that my money will be enough to influence them to keep me in office and to keep my Republicans in office.
And before we move on, Monique, AFSCME did come out in recent weeks, maybe in late last year, and sort of came up with a counter proposal, whether or not this was officially a proposal that was made to the Rounder administration. It was at least the first step, it seemed like at the time, to maybe saying, hey, there may be room for compromise here. What was that about, and have we heard any more about this proposal?
Sure. The union has tried to stress over and over again that they are trying to remain flexible. So a few weeks ago, before voting happened on a strike, they came forward and kind of said, hey, look, Governor, what about the settlement? It's the term that they're using. It would put in place a 4-year wage freeze for them and would also have them pay more towards their health care costs. That was not quite the same level of a health care cost increase that the governor is pushing for, and it was soundly rejected by the governor within a matter of hours, actually, which is something the union raised this week when they announced the results of their strike vote, saying, look, this governor wouldn't even consider something that we put forth. Of course, the governor says he doesn't think it was a real effort to kind of come to the table there.
One point of fact, Charlie had made reference earlier, I looked this up while we were talking, the $10,000 was over the term of a contract. It wasn't per year that AFSCME alleges that the average employee would have to pay more for their health insurance. But it is a little worse than that because they're also saying that the wage freeze the governor is demanding would also be a $10,000 pay cut for the typical employee.
Right, and there is a wage freeze in there for employees, but the governor has tried to propose this thing called a merit pay increase. So it would be based on an employee's performance, which the union, of course, says is subjective and can leave out a lot of employees day to day.
Well, we've gone a week and now a few extra days since the governor delivered his budget address. And unlike in recent years, we've not really seen the governor out promoting what was in his budget plan. Brian, Monique, you've been following the governor around, and he's staying pretty quiet on some of those ideas that he unveiled in that speech.
Yeah, well, we haven't really been following him around that much because of where he's been going, but I'll come back to that in a moment. In the past years, he'd give the speech, and then he kind of hit the road within the next couple of days, next week anyway, barnstorming the state to talk about. Last year, it was education funding. He was making this big show of saying how he was going to provide more education funding than any governor had in the past. This year, we learned after the fact that he instead went to Utah to celebrate his birthday. I believe it's his 61st birthday. Don't trust Wikipedia. It had the wrong information on there. He celebrated his birthday with his family on a ski trip. Now, why does this matter? I think it's interesting to note. I mean, yes, people are entitled to vacations. That's fine. But the idea is he makes this big budget proposal. He claims it's balanced in his speech. But when you actually start digging into the numbers, which people could not do until after the fact, because in a departure from precedent, he did not share any of the information with legislators or reporters before the speech. People started digging into the numbers. And then it turns out that there's anywhere, depending on how you're looking at it, from a $4.5 billion to a $7.2 billion gap in between what he's proposing spending and what Illinois is going to be collecting in tax revenue under current law. And his own budget director acknowledged that in testimony the following day, and the governor has not been out there defending his proposal and speaking it up, or really until Thursday of this week, taking questions on it.
Right. We saw the governor out on Wednesday. We tried to ask him a little bit about his budget, and he remained silent. He had a flock of reporters around him throwing questions at him, and he just kind of stares and does this awkward laugh he does. And I think it's an indication that it's a hard budget for him to defend. He's been out year after year saying that Democrats routinely propose budgets that are billions of dollars out of whack, but he's done the same. He says, you know, oh, that's not true. I've proposed things that are balanced, but they do require legislative action. It requires a whole bunch of moving parts that are difficult asks in any year, not to mention in the middle of our current budget impasse. And so there's not a lot of good things for him to talk about in this plan. And that's kind of indicative in his way that he used much of his budget proposal last week to embrace this plan that's being talked about in the Senate, the so-called grand bargain. Immediately after his budget speech, he cut an ad for a campaign video touting up this grand bargain, which actually angered a lot of Senate Democrats who said that the governor was trying to take credit for their hard work.
I'd like to throw in another scary factoid, if you will. All this talk about whether it's balanced or not is based on revenues expected to be collected in fiscal year 2018, which begins July 1st, and expenditures expected to be made, appropriations, authorized spending, or required spending during that year. What the deficit, be it $4 billion, be it $7 billion, in the FY18 plan doesn't factor in is the fact that the comptroller is sitting on $12, $13 billion worth of old bills. And so the first $12 billion or $13 billion of the roughly $32 billion in new revenue is going to be used to pay old bills and therefore not available for the $37 billion in new spending. So the hole is actually closer to $20 billion than it is to $7 billion.
And we're still trying to figure out exactly what the governor wants in a grand bargain, if we want to call it that. This plan that's in the Senate could be coming up, I guess, for more consideration next week. Monique, you've heard that lawmakers are still working on this.
That's right. Republican Senate Leader Christine Rodonia was out last week and said that we need to get a vote on this when the Senate comes back next week, or we might as well turn over the whole budget process to Speaker Mike Madigan. The question is that the longer that they go without some kind of vote, the harder it becomes to collect support. There's tons of lobbyists working against this thing. But also, a major component of this plan includes an income tax increase that would be retroactive to January 1. The further away you get from the beginning of the year, the bigger the chunk will come out of people's paychecks, which is not good come election time. Tax increases are not popular. Or you're looking at saying, okay, well, maybe we'll start at the middle of the year in July, and you miss out on half a year of revenue. But we are expecting a whole lot of changes in this plan when it comes forth next week. Well, maybe not a whole lot of changes, but some changes. The governor has said that he would not sign off on an income tax increase unless there's a permanent property tax freeze. The property tax freeze that's currently being considered in the Senate plan is temporary. There's also talk of an effort among Republicans in the Senate to push harder for some unfunded mandates to be released or relieved on schools. This is part of that argument for a property tax freeze. Local school districts and local governments say a freeze would hurt our bottom line. We tap into those funds to pay for teacher pensions, to pay for firefighter pensions, to just pay for daily operations. If you freeze that, we have no way to control our costs. So Republicans and the governor say, okay, we'll give you a little bit of leeway and allow you to make some of these cuts on your expense side by getting rid of these, quote, unfunded mandates. That could include anything from, you know, providing school bus services to putting up fire sprinklers in schools. So we expect to see some movement from there on that front. But really, it's all kind of a question of what ultimately will be put up on the board for lawmakers to vote on next week.
And does anybody think that the governor, you know, what he said during his budget address regarding the property tax freeze or anything else he said, did that throw a wrench into this whole thing, or is it still on, you know, is it still working behind the scenes, mind you, but still working towards some type of resolution in the Senate?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I think going into the budget address, people were thinking that the biggest problem in holding up the so-called grand bargain so far was that the Senate Republicans were in a really tough spot, right? They were going to be voting for a tax increase. They didn't know if their own governor would support this vote, which could be very unpopular. You know, was there enough quote unquote reform of issues like workers' compensation and mandates and other things we've been talking about to satisfy them? You had interest groups that are traditionally aligned with Republicans, like the Chamber of Commerce and the Illinois Policy Institute, an advocacy organization here in Springfield. They were coming out very hard against this bargain. And so the votes kept getting delayed. And there was a suggestion by Senate President John Cullerton that, you know, it might help if the governor actually at this point told the Republicans what he wants. Well, then he comes out and says he wants a permanent property tax freeze, which has pretty much been a non-starter, I think, for the Democrats. I mean, they view that as hobbling local governments indefinitely in Illinois. The answer is we don't know whether it's really helped or hurt, and we'll find out next week. I certainly, as Monique pointed out, the idea that the governor is now claiming credit and cut an ad for grand bargain and is portraying himself as the great compromiser here in Springfield, I think has rubbed a lot of Democrats the wrong way.
It's important to note that's kind of why he was cut out of this process to begin with. The Senate began their negotiations in secret over the holidays without the governor involved and without Speaker Madigan involved, because they have had this personal battle that has gotten in the way of negotiations. At one point, they they couldn't even agree how to hold meetings and when to hold meetings. So those two were cut out entirely, with the acknowledgement that eventually they'd have to be brought into the fold. But the hope was that the Senate could quickly pass this package before they got their hands on it. Now, the Senate has in some ways invited the governor into this process and can be blamed for themselves for making their jobs more difficult at this point.
I did want to leave just a couple of minutes here to talk this week. The House Speaker, Michael Madigan, is forming an education committee to basically study school funding. It seems like deja vu all over again, because we just had a commission that the governor put together that met many times over the past year and did a lot of work on this issue. At the end of the day, they did not come up with any legislative proposals. They just identified the fact that the current school funding formula is out of whack. Charlie, first let me ask you, is this something that we've seen this before? Usually a committee is often a place you go to, you don't want to pass something. It's a place to go, put a study committee together. That sounds like what this could be.
Yeah, the whole issue of school funding is a topic, well, to really date myself, it was an issue at the Constitutional Convention in 1970. When delegates chose to put in an education article saying that the state has the primary responsibility for funding K-12 education. It was an issue within months of the Constitution being ratified, a lawsuit was filed saying the state isn't paying the bulk of the cost of education. The Illinois Supreme Court said, well, that line in the Constitution is a goal. It's not a mandate. There have been numerous attempts to try and reform this. There was a commission, appointed by Governor Edgar after his reelection in 1994, that studied the problem and came back with recommendations that here's what we need to do. The bottom line in all of these studies is that, yeah, we don't fund schools adequately in the first place, and secondly, there's great inequities built into our system, because we provide something like $2,000 per kid less to fund low-income students than we do wealthy students. We are the absolute worst state in the union in terms of that. There are some states that provide $2,000 more to educate a low-income kid. So this has been ongoing. The governor had a commission that basically said, yeah, this is a problem and here's some things we need to look at, but they didn't produce legislation. The speaker's task force, made up of House members, Republicans and Democrats, will hold hearings. They may or may not come out with some kind of an agreed bill. But the bottom line for all of this is it's a question of money. The state doesn't put enough money into its K-12 system. We're at the bottom of the heap for doing that, too. And so I'm not sure whether this will be productive or not, or if it'll just be another study that comes out with platitudes and kind of gets set aside.
And we'll go for our notes from the field, and we'll go to Monique.
Well, I would like to say that the Democratic controlled legislature is considering several different proposals to honor former President Barack Obama from Illinois. They range from renaming I-55 after him to having a state holiday. The governor was asked to weigh in on whether or not he would support the idea of a holiday, and his answer was kind of, and that he thinks that we should honor our former president. It's a very good thing that we had Barack Obama in office, but nobody should get the day off for it.
All right, that's all the time we've got for today. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Monique Garcia. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.